The troop shuttle made a careful circle around the island. Its onboard scans could pick out details from a distance that made light weapons ineffective. The NEMs clustered on the runway with the little huddle of scientists obviously under guard and the tarp-wrapped bundles of the cargo beside them. The shuttle made another approach, this time dropping out a communications array bundle. The NEM commander grabbed it.
No. We remain land-based. At Big Tree. Waiting, but we got grabbed for this mission. Yeah. No. No, he died in the first firefight. Got his body if you want it. I've got his ears.
The shuttle swung back, slower yet, and settled onto the runway. The great hatch in the rear swung down, forming a ramp. Five men came out, weapons ready.
Surely there aren't just five.
Another five came down, setting up a perimeter. The NEMs waved. The newcomers waved back as they came forward. Margu could sense the moment in which they decided it was all right, when their attention shifted from the mutineers to the scientists and their equipment.
Got them all, did you?
Except the dead ones. Listen, we've got to get all the support, and there's another load packed up inside. How many personnel do you have?
18. They want us to hurry it up.
Come on, then!
Half the NEMs turned, as if to head back inside. The others were still obviously guarding the scientist prisoners.
All right, come on down!
Eight more armed men came down the shuttle's ramp. These were much less wary, their weapons now slung on their backs.
We're going in to pick up the rest of the cargo!
With her primary task still the professor's life, Margu had no part in the brief, violent struggle that followed. When the NEMs and the other loyalist troops jumped the mutineers and killed them, while the putative rebel NEMs chivied the scientists toward the shuttle. It took less than 2 minutes, and most of it had happened out of sight of scan from overhead. Margu scrambled out of her pea suit into the gray ship suit of the dead enemy, rolled him into her pea suit, and let one of the NEMs haul him out by the legs. She crammed the comm helmet on her head, tucking the telltale red hair out of sight, and stalked out onto the runway as if she belonged there. The cargo was moving slowly up the ramp, with the laboring scientists complaining vociferously that it was dangerous, that it could blow them all up, that they should be careful. The NEMs swung their weapons, threateningly. Scientists cringed. Margu found it hard to believe it wasn't real. From the unreality of those hours of waiting when it was real, to this, the reversal confused her, but she found herself playing her part anyway. They made it onto the shuttle, Margu and the others working under the scientists' directions to get the cargo lashed down. Out of the corner of her eye, she saw one of the mutineer flight crew peering through from the flight deck.
How much longer?
They say it could blow us all to hell if it wiggles in flight. And it's heavy. You don't want it to shift.
All right, all right. Just try to hurry it up. Admiral wants to boost out of this system now we've been spotted.
Margu turned her head away, afraid her expression would be too obvious. So her half-remembered design had worked. And somewhere, sometime soon, if not already, Fleet would find out what was going on at Copper Mountain. At least that had worked. And if she died today, she would have done something worthwhile. When they had the last of the equipment in the shuttle, one of the NEMs signaled the shuttle pilots. Margu couldn't hear what was said, but the sudden lurch of the shuttle made it clear they were moving. Their own pilots, wearing dead mutineers' uniforms, stood near the front, ready to take over. They had been airborne perhaps 10 minutes when Major Garson worked his way forward past the pallets and tie-downs to the front. He spoke to the NEM sergeant, and then the waiting pilots. Margu's stomach clenched. She glanced at the professor, who was grinning. She wondered if having a collection of crazy ideas constantly fermenting in his brain protected him from fear. Only one NEM could fit on the flight deck, but armored as he was, the sergeant should be safe from most weapons the pilots might carry. And they'd shown no concern about their passengers. The NEM went through onto the flight deck. The first pilot followed closely. Margu took a good grip of the stanchion. They'd all been warned to get a good handhold just in case. In case of what, she wondered. The shuttle nosed over sickeningly, and Margu's stomach rose to the back of her throat.
What's happening up front?
Weight slammed back onto her as the shuttle pitched up, then lifted as the nose dropped once more. Margu gulped, swallowed, gulped, and just managed not to spew. The downward pitch leveled slowly, and weight returned, stabilized. The flight deck door opened, and one of their own looked out.
We've got it now.
To your places!
Margu made her way to the rear of the shuttle, and had, from that vantage, a clear view of the actors as they went about their pretense. Margu found the experience very unlike watching a story cube, even though she understood the plot. Knowing, as she did, that the conversation was faked on one end, she couldn't help worrying that it was faked on the other end as well.
It's hooked up. You ready to see if it works? We should be dropping off your scans.
This better work.
We've never tried it out of the lab.
Margu glanced at the professor, who was nodding and grimacing at the actors.
What if the mutineers have a vid scan in here?
Aderson was enjoying himself far too much to be a real scientist captured by the mutineers and forced to betray his side. They could be laughing their heads off up in the station, just waiting the best moment to blow them all away.
Be careful! It's very sensitive to fluctuations in power levels!
Two of the scientists had uncovered the device and plugged in a control panel of some sort. At the professor's nod, they did whatever it was that turned the device on and off. Supposedly, the shuttle disappeared, partially returned, disappeared, returned, repeatedly. Margu tried to relax as the climax neared. She had her assignment to signal when to drop the trailer with its weapons pods and assorted junk.
Zedzone, drop it!
Margu tapped the crew chief at the tail and clung to the stanchion as he opened the cone and pushed the lever. The shuttle's nose bobbed up again as the load slid out and the marked cable unrolled in a streak.
And Zedzone?
Zedzone, we should be completely invisible with a computer-generated scan filling the hole as we go.
That'll blur his screens for at least another 30 seconds.
The shuttle flew on, out across the open ocean, where the generated fill pattern should, the scientists thought, have its best chance to work. It had the fuel load to circle the planet, but, as Garson had pointed out, all the airfields would have crew and might still have intact communications gear. Either loyalist or mutineer, someone would be sure to comment on the arrival of a troop shuttle, and if they tried to communicate themselves, that could be detected from topside.
We have to assume that they're using the surveillance satellites. If we drop Zed or open a comm hole in it, we're immediately visible and vulnerable. We can land this thing anywhere, just about. That's what a combat shuttle is for, after all.
Half a world away from the main base at Copper Mountain, a loose gaggle of rocky islands rose from the blue sea. Large and small, rough and rougher, cloaked in grass and trees. They had never been used for anything but occasional shuttle landing exercises. They flew low over several of them until they spotted the bright reflection of what might be a freshwater stream. That one was much larger than any of the stack islands, with a shallow grassy bowl set above low cliffs. The pilots eased the shuttle in vertically, and at last it came to rest. The broad meadow was striped with shadows from the rocky outcrops. Overhead, a wavering cloud streamed, smooth on the windward side and ragged on the lee. Beyond it, far across the ocean, they could not see from this bowl. Rows of cumulus drifted slowly before the wind.
And it's a large island, but it's still an island. At least we're safe up here from any reasonable storm.
Now that they weren't having to fly the unfamiliar shuttle, the pilots had time to work with the instruments and see what, if anything, could penetrate Zed's stealth blanket in an outward direction. After an hour or so, one of the pilots came out of the shuttle.
Outbound. They're outbound, the whole lot of them.
You sure?
Well, unless this stealth thing is creating a very weird false image that looks just like a lot of ships moving into formation toward the jump point.
Time to jump?
Well, they're hours from a safe radius for micro-jumping. Then it'll depend on whether they choose to micro-jump out to the jump point or not, but they'll be out of near-scan range in a few minutes behind the planet.
It occurs to me to wonder why they just didn't incinerate this planet as they left.
Maybe they have other allies down here.
Perhaps, though I don't know how much they care about their allies. Are there resources here they still want, even though they think the weapons research stuff is all gone? Do they want this as a base later?
Once they're gone, we can just fly back to the main base, can't we?
If we built a wooden ship, it'd be less detectable by conventional means, and we could sail it back.
Gussie, I am not going to indulge your taste for historical recreation and try to build a sailing ship from these trees. They aren't even straight.
That's why we could do it. Look at them. They're already shaped like keels and ribs and things. I'm sure Margue thinks it's a good idea.
Professor Aderson gave Margue a wide grin. She found it hard to resist. But the thought of going out on the water in a homemade boat terrified her.
Oh, look at her! You scared her, Gussie!
We have a perfectly good troop carrier. We'd be crazy not to use it.
All right. But you are taking all the fun out of this!
We'll leave when they're out of near-scan range and then go back to the main base. We've done what we came for. They may need us back there.
The professor wandered off to look at the grove of twisted trees.
We'd better leave soon, or he'll decide to have us make spears and crossbows from those trees.
Nothing that simple. He'll go for trebuchets and ballistas and a couple of hang gliders.